a wrap-up of your day from Lincoln's most listened to news and talk station. Welcome to Drive Time Lincoln on 1400 KLIN.
And a good afternoon to you on a Friday, January 15th, as you're out and about. Getting ready for your weekend. Kind of blew in. Snow and wind blizzard warning. Didn't really expect that one. I don't think they thought we were going to get as much snow as we ended up getting, but you know, the wind certainly was there. The wind lived up to its billing, so certainly appreciate that. But now we are out of the blizzard warning proper, and just until 7, we are in a winter weather advisory. So still, take caution as you are traveling around this afternoon. Make sure that you get where you are going safely. Drive Time Lincoln, we turn to the phones. Dr. Roberto Cortinas, he is the assistant professor at the UNL School of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Science. And Dominic Cristiano is a UNL master student. And they join me today on Drive Time Lincoln. Thanks for joining us, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
It's great to be here, Michael.
Now, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Now, Dominic, the reason that I reached out to you guys to do this interview today is because I was interested in a research project that you were involved in. But before I get there, I do want to ask you, I saw that you're a member of the NSF National Research Traineeship Program at Nebraska. How did you get involved with that, and what is the program's purpose?
Sure. So the NSF NRT program, it is a collaborative program for grad students throughout the University of Nebraska. We take grad students from a bunch of different disciplines, and we're all working together to solve problems related to ecological resilience, specifically in agriculture ecosystems. So there's a lot of us in my department from natural resources. There's a few people from civil engineering or from agronomy. There's people in biological sciences. So just kind of bouncing ideas off each other and getting to solve problems from a collaborative perspective.
Now, as part of that program, are you able to choose your own research projects? Does it just have to be in a specific field? How does that work?
Yeah, you're able to have a lot of input on what you want to research. So some people come in knowing the professors that they want to work with, and they have projects lined up. Others, like myself, it's kind of a little process to go through working with the advisors to figure out what you're interested in. All the projects have to be focused on the concept of ecological resilience, which is basically a way of thinking of systems and how they respond to disturbance. So it's kind of broad, and people have their own freedom to choose what they want to do.
Okay, so I guess that would lead me to my next question. Dominic, why did you choose ticks?
That's a great question.
And I only say it like that because I hate ticks. I would have a feeling if we had a straw poll right now, there'd be a very high percentage of people that hate ticks. Now, I understand what you're doing is to help people along those ticks, but you had to get involved with a lot of ticks to do this research. So I'm curious, was there something specific about them that drew you to them and not them to you?
Yeah, I think I was originally, and I still am, interested in ornithology and waterfowl. So I came here thinking that I might study things like that, but my focus shifted to wildlife disease. And as I got more involved with a few different programs, like the One Health program here at UNL, I started learning more about how environmental issues affect human health. And vector-borne diseases, like tick-borne diseases, are one of the main research focuses of those environmental issues affecting human health. So I think ticks are just a great way to study how we're all connected to animal health, plant health, and the environmental health.
Well, and it is interesting because ticks are one of those bridges between those different environments and use that as their transportation systems. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but, you know, as I mentioned, kind of tongue-in-cheek, ticks are very, very much a pest, and most people don't like them. But there are also risks associated with ticks and some of the things that they can spread. In fact, last year, I recall a man out in western Nebraska in his 60s died of Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And that was the first one, I believe they had said, in 5 years, a death attributed to that. So there is a risk involved, especially, Dominic, with the, you know, likelihood that people are going to be getting outdoors in droves once that opportunity opens up again.
Right. Yeah. While these diseases that come with ticks, they're often treatable, there are some instances that if you don't catch them quick enough, they can lead to cases like that.
Now, I mentioned ticks that can carry that particular disease. I know there's different things, but first off, what types of ticks do we even have here in the state of Nebraska?
There are a handful. The ones that we're focused on are identified as medically important tick species. And there's four of them. So we look at the Lone Star tick, the American dog tick, the Rocky Mountain wood tick, and then most recently the black-legged tick, which is the famous one from the northeast part of the country that is the vector for, or the primary vector for for Lyme disease.
Now, Dr. Cortinas, I wanted to get you involved here because part of this project is building maps so that you can see kind of where the ticks are going and kind of check those migration patterns. And I know that Dominic had come to you to get involved with examining a lot of that historical data. Were you surprised at all with what you learned with your partnership in this project?
Well, it's always we're always learning. We're always, you know, finding new new things, and that's really been the case, really, with ticks in general. I mean, the problems have not just been limited to mosquitoes. We've had issues with mosquitoes, but even some of the work that Dominic's group they've been involved with, there's been indications that we've got other ticks making their way northward. And so everything right now is fairly dynamic, meaning everything's, you know, things are just changing pretty radically. A lot of it has to do with changes in our environment. You know, it's this is what we do in science, right? We get these problems. We always have problems. We go out there, we tackle them and see what's going on out there.
Drive Time Lincoln on a Friday afternoon. We're visiting with Dr. Roberto Cortinas, assistant professor with UNL School of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Science, and Dominic Cristiano. He is a UNL master's student. Not getting you ahead of yourself, Dominic. You have to wait. Just wait a little bit longer that one.
I'll take the title.
I'm going to bring that back to Dr. Cortinas.
Yes.
You just hold on a minute, Dominic. My wife is also a master's student, so I know that she's ready to go too, but you probably have to just wait a minute. So back to my actual question, as opposed to all that diatribe, Dr. Cortinas, I wanted to ask you too. I noticed that one of the things that you had talked about was getting a cooperation with the Nebraska Department of Agriculture and something referred to as Tick-Tag-Go. So I don't know how closely those two things are related, but I was interested in what the tie was there.
Yeah, I mean, Tick-Tag-Go is more of an effort that's originated really from a faculty member faculty here at the university involved, especially in the Department of Entomology. But what it really is focused around is citizen science. Tick-Tac-Go is a way by which our citizens of the state can go out. They can actually, you know, if they see a tick or they have a tick on them, they're able then to provide information as to you know, maybe an image, a photograph of that tick, and then, you know, letting us know where in the state they acquired that tick. And this works in collaboration with a website called iNaturalist. And essentially what we're trying to do is receive all this information from people as to what ticks may be out there. It's really helped us quite a bit. I think there's a lot of research right now, not just here, but throughout the country, where citizen science is really allowing us to get a really good idea of the risk of ticks and other vectors out there.
Well, and sorry to interject. I just wanted to mention too, one part of that that's so intriguing is the fact that ticks, they don't fly, they don't really jump, they don't run any long particular distance. So the fact that they're migrating, it seems like that would be a multifaceted research to find out in what ways the carriers are coming, why, and how. So it just seems there's a lot involved there.
Yeah, I mean, ticks have always been moving around. And so, I mean, you know, most of the time, ticks are not found on animals or, you know, on hosts, as we'd say. And most of the time, they spend their time off the host. I mean, but when they do get on those hosts, you know, if you're on a whitetail and that whitetail decides it's going to migrate, whatever ticks are on that whitetail are going to go wherever that whitetail goes, right? It's just going on the bus. And that is the primary way by which these ticks get around. Now, this has always been happening. So as Dominic mentioned, you know, we do have black-legged ticks or deer ticks now along the Platte here, but those ticks have always been coming in. It's just that the conditions were not quite right. So these events are always happening. They're always happening. But it's what we call invasion events. They're always happening. But then for whatever reason, some factor changed, and now we've got these ticks being able to set up shop when in the past they couldn't.
All right, Dominic, I'll turn back to you now. We've talked about the ticks. Here they are. We've seen where they're coming from. So now that we're looking at them, we're dealing with them on a daily basis, what are their ideal living conditions like? And are there some types of precautions that homeowners can take or people going outdoor can take to try to keep them off of them?
Sure. Roberto could probably actually speak to the ideal living conditions a little bit better than me. He's got a lot more experience. As far as prevention goes, individually, just knowing your risk and being prepared, I think, is the most important thing. There's a lot of tick repellent products that you can use on yourself as well, but also being really vigilant after you are in a place where you're likely to encounter ticks, of checking your body afterwards, taking a shower after you come back inside, checking those hard-to-look places like behind the ears, under the arms, or behind the knees, things like that. And in your own yard, people always suggest maintaining a barrier between wooded areas where the ticks are likely to be and your own living space in the backyard as well.
Before we go to Dr. Cortinas, Dominic, I did want to ask you, I noticed in your research too, you mentioned that you don't recommend people use pesticides for ticks. Why is that?
I think that's a little bit of a personal choice as well. Pesticides work in some cases, but there's also been issues with resistance in the ticks themselves, creating these kinds of superbug things. So I think a lot of times when we rely on those kinds of controls, it's not an effective way to get the problem where it needs to be attacked. It's kind of a short-term effort that might lead to changes in the system, in the long run, that could come back to bite us. No pun intended.
Nice. Dr. Cortinas, bringing that back to that ideal living conditions, obviously it's on my head or wherever else I find them and want to attack them, and dogs where they get to look like grapes, which is horrible. But what are those ideal? What are they hanging around doing while they're waiting for something to suck on?
That's pretty much all they do. You know, they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they do. And they essentially, you know, they save up their energy. All they do is climb up on some vegetation, you know, blade of grass, and they just sit there. They just lie in wait, you know, and then as soon as an animal goes by or a human goes by, they'll just latch on. You know, ticks are long-lived critters. I mean, they're not like mosquitoes. They're only around for a couple of weeks. The ticks that we most commonly see around here, they live 2 years. And they essentially, by you know, keeping their movement down, by not, you know, not using a lot of their reserves, they're able just to hang out and wait until something comes along that's going to provide them a good blood meal. So what we try to do is, and getting back to what Dominic was talking about, as far as, you know, that environment around the home, you know, what we try to do is we try to prevent places where the ticks can survive. And so things that you can do is, you know, keep the lawn cut, you know, rake leaves. What you're trying to do there is you're trying to get rid of that habitat, that little micro habitat where the ticks actually spend a lot of their time, usually under leaf litter, in tall grasses, those kinds of things. If you can landscape your property, even if we're talking here about acreages, if you're able to at least manage the area around your home, keep the lawn down, keep the litter down, all the leaves and such, that helps to reduce your risk of being bit. And that's what the name of the game is. It's preventing tick bites. That's what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. And that kind of leads us to the last thing that I did want to ask you guys about today is that there's always some confusion as to what to do if there is a tick on you, or how to properly look for them, or what you need to do and I don't even know if it's true or not. If the head gets stuck in your skin, it'll grow a new body. Maybe talk about that kind of stuff and how you do this so that people know what to do so that they're not just, you know, knocking more ticks around in their house.
Sure. Go ahead, Roberto.
No, well, I mean, yeah, what I just want to say is that's not even a head. That's all mouth parts. Awesome. I like to call them the Mick Jaggers of the arthropod world, because the big old thing that's actually in you is just all mouth part. Ticks are actually much uglier than you think.
I don't want to see that.
Fused head, body, and yeah, they're pretty nasty. Yeah. They're just one big fused thing with legs. So if you do get those mouth parts in you, I mean, you know, you want to, I guess, and Dominic, you know, if you want to, you know, go ahead and, you know, how we properly remove ticks. But, you know,
I'm kind of sad that I even asked this question, to be honest with you. I probably should have, I should have just let that go. I know more now than I wanted to. But Dominic, Dominic, please, please continue on with this conversation.
Oh, jeez. Sure. The most important thing is if you find one on you to remove it quickly. The longer that tick species are on you and attached to you, the better chance they have of transmitting these pathogens that cause disease. For some ticks, it takes longer than a day. It might take 2 days of being attached. Other ticks are a lot quicker than that. So just getting them removed from you as quick as possible, and don't mess around with any of the wive tails, things that you heard about, nail polish or fire or things like that. You just want to take your tweezers, grab as close to the skin as you can, and gently, smoothly pull the tick off of your body straight up. Don't jerk it around. You're not going to try to break the body or anything like that.
Yeah, because they seem like little tiny armadillos or something. What do you do after you pull it out? How do you destroy it forever so that it'll never harm anyone ever again?
Yeah. Well, put it in alcohol. And keep it. That, you know, that's the thing. So I'll have a lot of, you know, people who are like, they're so upset with having that tick on their dog or in themselves. And boy, they just do mean things to them. But what I would recommend is, you know, try to save that tick. If you can, put it in some ethanol, isopropyl alcohol, rubbing alcohol, whatever it is, just preserve it for a while. Because if you do end up getting sick, or let's say your dog gets sick, then we have something that we can test for, right? And again, go to that tic-tac-go site, and maybe, you know, if you have that tick, you take an image of it and let us take a look at it. So, but I understand. I have people who, you know, flush them down the toilet and do other things. Mm-hmm. What you really want to try to do is preserve that tick, because, you know, let's say you get a fever a couple, you know, 10 days later, or you just don't feel right. That tick is going to have whatever disease pathogen may be affecting you.
Well,
so you could get it tested.
I am glad that you clarified why you're putting that tick in the alcohol, because at first I thought it was perhaps some morbid trophy or some threat to other ticks that would perhaps come that way and maybe be a message to them. But, you know, I never thought I'd have this much fun talking about ticks, honestly, guys, but I do appreciate you joining me today. It was great information, and, you know, it was fun too. So thanks for that.
Well, my pleasure, Michael.
Yep. Thanks again.
All right. We've been talking with Assistant Professor of UNL School of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Science, Dr. Roberto Cortinas, and Dominic Cristiano, UNL Master's student. Thanks again, gentlemen. Appreciate it. And who knows, maybe we'll have this conversation again sometime in the future.
Well, thank you.
Thanks again. Yeah.
All right. That's interesting stuff. Like I said, probably learned more than I ever wanted to, but couldn't resist. I feel better about things now. I at least know how to get rid of them and teach them valuable lessons about messing with me in my home, in any case. All right, let my Uncle Lou sing us out here for a moment. We'll wrap up the first half hour, and then we'll check in with Fox News and Carla James in the KLAN newsroom. Drive Time Lincoln rolls on next.
You're listening to Lincoln's only local afternoon talk. This is Drive Time Lincoln on 1400 KLIN.
And welcome back to Drive Time Lincoln. Nearing the bottom of the hour on this Friday, January 15th. Fox News, halfway into the bottom of the hour. Not exactly. I talked myself into corners, back out of that. And then Carla James will have a news update for us in the KLAN newsroom. Interesting conversation. Like I said, I never thought I would have that much fun talking about ticks, but great personalities and a lot of timely information. As you know, it never stays winter for too long around here, and those bugs always find a way to get out as early as possible. So perhaps as spring gets closer, I have a chance to visit with them again. We'll see what happens as we go on. Coming up in the next half hour here on Drive Time Lincoln, we are going to hopefully talk with Jenny Campana. No, she had a busy day over at the Nebraska Department of Transportation with everything going on around the state. Hopefully things went relatively well. I know they had a few accidents reported this morning. Hopefully everybody's doing their thing this afternoon, because it is slippery out there in spots. There is still wind and snow, so make sure you're careful. But we'll talk with Jenny about that, plus some other exciting stuff that has to do with roads and building them, fixing them. Be good stuff. We'll be back with more Drive Time Lincoln here in a few moments. Again, if you've got something you'd like to pass along, 402-479-1400, or check out our KLAN.com poll of the day. What's your opinion on LPS snow days during the pandemic? Keep the policy as it is or change them to remote learning days. KLAN.com.
News. I'm Rich Dennison. The Justice Department reports it's monitoring internet traffic about plans for armed protests designed to disrupt next week's presidential inauguration. ATF Special Agent in Charge Sean Benedict says his agency and others are doing their best to prevent violence.
We have special agents, explosive specialists, bomb technicians, canine units, and our special response team all assigned and deployed in and around Washington, D.C., working with Secret Service, Capitol Police, and our MPD partners.
Federal officials say 25,000 National Guard troops will be available to provide security in the nation's capital. A strong winter storm in the Midwest creating blizzard conditions, making travel difficult.
We'll deal with what Mother Nature delivers, and we'll do our best.
Lee Anderson with Fargo, North Dakota Public Works. The storm shutting down interstate highways in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, and the Dakotas. America is listening to Fox News.
This is where Lincoln's newsmakers make the news. You're listening to Drive Time Lincoln on 1400 KLIN.
And welcome back to Drive Time Lincoln, 538 on a Friday, January 15th. Take caution as you are out and about on this Friday evening. Blizzard warning no more, but there is a winter weather advisory still in effect for another hour and 20-ish, about 7. But either way, when that ends, it doesn't mean just immediately everything is good to go full speed. So just take some caution out there and be careful as you are out and about on this Friday afternoon. We turn to our phone lines now. Joining me is Jenny Campana with the Nebraska Department of Transportation. Jenny, thank you for joining me on this snowy Friday afternoon.
It's good to be here.
You know, to be honest with you, when I was getting ready to do the interview today, I remember the last time you were on the show, we had a blizzard. So I don't know if somehow there's a connection there, but that does seem kind of odd that every time we talk to you, the roads are not very good. But today it seemed like a lot of this was kind of just to the eastern side of the state. Was that sort of what it looked like for you in the office there today?
Yeah, so most of the snow really was on the eastern end of the state. We did have some issues, you know, further west with the really high winds and high-profile vehicles, and then, of course, wildfires that were occurring out further west. But the snow really was really centralized or to the eastern part of the state. So it's been windy and, you know, lots of drifts out there, but our crews have been out and about.
Yeah, and that certainly it helps to be prepared, and you never know just exactly how much of that's going to come down, but I think it even was a little bit more than they anticipated, but still, you could definitely tell the crews were out and about getting stuff done, so appreciate that. Jenny, I also wanted to, before we get into the other topic, again, I was doing this, and I was like, oh, there's so much stuff to talk to Jenny about, it's been a while, but actually some good news coming out of last year. I saw that the December traffic fatality was at 9, which was way down from the year before. And even overall, it looked like fatalities were down a little bit in 2020 from 2019.
Yes, that is true. We're trying to do a lot more concerted effort in trying to really educate folks on safe driving, things that they can do to make sure that they are safe drivers. Our biggest messages that we have out there is buckle up and phone down. You know, put that seatbelt on every time, even if it's just a quick run down to the store. And put that phone down. You know, distractions are a big part of our crashes that we see today. So we really want to encourage folks to do the right thing and put that seatbelt on and put that phone down.
Well, and Jenny, that's a great thing to mention because, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have cell phones. There were other things that could perhaps distract us, whether it was food or, you know, somebody opening up one of those big maps like we used to have to do to get around before GPS existed. But, you know, it's so important that they understand how much your reaction time is diminished if you're busy doing something else when you're behind that wheel.
Definitely. You know, when you really think about it, when the speed of a car, especially when you're getting up on highway speeds where you're at 65, 70, you know, 75 miles an hour, it takes quite a ways for you to come to a complete stop. And you travel much further than you think you do. And so anytime you look down away, you're taking your eyes off the road. And we really need everybody to be aware because there's folks around you. There's pedestrians out there. There's other cars. it's just not worth it.
Jenny Campano with the Nebraska Department of Transportation joins us this afternoon on Drive Time Lincoln. Another thing that actually just came down today, Jenny, is the selection of the County Bridge Match Program. Now, I understand this is the fifth round, and there were 21 proposals that were selected. But this has to be great news for some communities out there that are desperately needing to get some of those bridges fixed.
Yes, definitely. You know, we've had great success with this program. It's a very popular program. And we've been able to get a lot done in terms of upgrading bridges and sometimes even removing them off the system, which seems like it's counterintuitive. But if it's a bridge that's no longer necessary, no longer needed, then you can remove it off the system and you don't need to worry about it anymore. So we've had a lot of success with it across the entire state. So we're very excited about it.
Well, and certainly, you know, I remember when I was a kid living out in the country, we actually still had, a wooden bridge that went across the canal. And, you know, I know that there are some out there that are just long, long overdue in needing to be repaired or replaced. And so this process, actually, I believe, was the application process back in October when the counties had to turn in their proposals?
Yes, the application process was back in October, and we go through the process and look for the innovations that are out there and ways that people are trying to do different things that we can improve the system. And we had a good group that came through this time, and we're pretty excited to see what comes next.
Well, and it's interesting you mentioned that with some of the innovation, because I would assume that need has a lot to do with the selections too, but there has to be more to it than just that, I would assume.
Yes, and we want to look for things that make sense in terms of being cost-effective and still achieving the needs that you have. So if you have a traditional bridge in place, but we might be able to get an innovative approach by using some culvert systems to be able to get it in place so the road still remains there, it's still well-maintained, it's much easier to maintain it as a whole, has a longer lifespan. Those are the things that we really want to look for to make sure that the system is reliable for everybody who drives across it every day.
And is there information they can find more about that program on the NDOT website?
Absolutely. If you go to the DOT website, which is dot.nebraska.gov, and if you look under projects and scroll kind of the bottom and look to the County Bridge Match Program, there's a whole bunch of information out there, including a GIS map that you can click on, and you can see the progress that we've had through the entire state since we've launched the program.
Jenny Campano with the Nebraska Department of Transportation joins us this afternoon on Drive Time Lincoln. And now we come around to the reason why I tried to get a hold of you in the first place, Jenny, was to talk about the 2040 statewide transportation plan. Now, a lot of people might already know this is out there and may have even looked at the virtual plan online, but the public comment period for the 2040 statewide transportation plan actually is coming to a close very quickly. So if they have anything they'd like to add, it's probably going to be needing to get in very quickly.
Absolutely. And so the point of our 2040 plan is that transportation is one of those things you really have to take a really long look at. You can look at a lot of our major projects that we have, and it takes years a lot of times to plan for them, design them, and really get them off the ground. So we try to do a 20-year plan so that we can look and see what does the future hold? What are things that we really need to be looking at? And as technology evolves and you look at more autonomous vehicles and connected vehicles and the need for intelligent transportation systems, those are all things that we wanted to take into consideration that says, you need to think about this as we're going forward. So that plan's out there for people to take a look at. I'd encourage folks to go and take a look. You can look for it on our website for the Long Range Transportation Plan. And it's also all over our social media. You know, if you go to any of our Facebook posts, on Twitter, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, you'll be able to find it. And we just extended the comment period, so we will be closing that on the 22nd. We want to make sure people had ample time to be able to go visit the site, take a look, and leave a comment about some of the things that we think are important to transportation. But we want to make sure that those that have to use the system have a chance to be able to hear their voice in there as well.
Well, and that's good stuff, because initially that was set to expire on Monday, I believe. So now you've extended to next Friday. So that is great to give the public an extra chance to maybe look at it and see, you know, because there may be some things that you even could overlook that somebody that uses those roads or travels that way or goes over that bridge every day may see that, you know, just may slip past the radar. So this is a great way for people to let you know about that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we want to make sure that we really involve the community and Nebraskans as a whole when we do these types of things, because they're the ones, as you say, that you're the ones that drive the system, and you know it in and out. And so getting your feedback is really important for us. So that way, as we build towards the future, we have a complete picture.
So, Jenny, this obviously, the 2040 plan, it's 20 years in the future. And like you said, there's just certain things that need to be taken into account because some of these projects can take, you know, 3, 5, even longer years to complete. One of the ones that comes into mind, obviously, is the East Beltway that people are hoping will eventually come after the South Beltway's finished. Isn't that how we are in life? We don't even have the South one done yet, and we're already looking to the East, Jenny. That just kind of seems to be human nature. But the question that I wanted to ask you was, the 2040 plan, how flexible is it? How much of a framework it is? Because like you mentioned, contingencies could arise. In 2040, we may be driving, you know, air cars around and not using roads as much. So how much flexibility is involved in that as you look down 2 decades into the future?
I'm glad you brought that up because that's a really good question. You know, there's a lot of planning documents that traditionally, you know, if you would have done this 20 years ago when we did our last one, you're really looking at programmatic, like what projects are we trying to accomplish and when? And what we've looked at now is more of what are the influences that we need to take into account. So it's not necessarily trying to get this project done here and here, but what do we need to consider? Are there going to be less licensed drivers? Is there going to be more need to have transit in communities? So those are a lot of the topics that we want to talk about. But in order to make sure that we stay on top of it, we want to make sure we revisit it frequently. So instead of waiting 20 years to go over it again, this is one of those things that we want to make sure that we look at, we dust off every few years and say, hey, does this still make sense? And if we need to make adjustments, then we'll make adjustments.
Well, and certainly a lot to consider, I'm sure, as you look at all the miles and miles of roads that are across the state of Nebraska. So if people want to be a part of this, if they want to go check out the virtual open house, maybe make their comments known, Jenny, what should they do?
I would encourage you to go to our website and look for the Long Range Transportation Plan, the 2040 Long Range Transportation Plan. You can also find it on Facebook. If you go to our Facebook page and look for the Long Range Transportation Plan there. Twitter, LinkedIn, those are all good places to get that direct link.
Okay, Jenny, anything else that you want to throw in while I've got you on the air this afternoon?
Just as it's a snowy night in Nebraska, so I would really encourage folks, make sure when you get out there that you check 511.nebraska.gov before you get out on the road. And as I said before, make sure you buckle up and put that phone down.
Absolutely. Great information. Jenny Cambina, thank you so much for joining me today on Drive Time Lincoln. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
All right, that's Jenny Cambina with the Nebraska Department of Transportation joining me on this Friday afternoon edition of Drive Time Lincoln. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will put the wraps on this week and let you get out and about and do your business. Weekend's coming. That's good stuff. Good stuff. We'll be back with more Drive Time Lincoln right after this.
Local voices, local reporters, local news, done right. This is Drive Time Lincoln on 1400 KLIN.
And welcome back to Drive Time Lincoln as we are on the downhill slide on a Friday, January 15th. Chris Lofgren.
That was an apropos analogy. Downward slide, downhill slide.
Because everybody's sliding around today?
It has almost like a light switch. Turned to pretty icy road conditions. I had our good listener, Howdy John. A lot of listeners know who Howdy John is. He was heading back home and watched an accident happen on Old Cheney Road between 70th and 84th. That has turned into a sheet of ice.
Yeah, and that's Old Cheney. Straight uphill because the way up to Lincoln Christian going up from that
way. That's a hilly area. So I think our refreeze is starting to happen.
Yeah.
And people need to be super careful now. Even though our main arterials look clear and clean, they are going to refreeze.
Well, a lot of that, Chris, is, you know, we were hovering right around that freezing mark all day. It was just kind of on that line where the snow will hit and it'll kind of just melt enough to where, you know, it gets a little of that moisture down there. And then once it hits now where it's like 30 degrees, wind's blowing, wind chills at 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, and we all know driving around Lincoln, especially the neighborhoods, there are a lot of hills up and down and a lot of roads that don't get tended to because simply just can't.
That's it.
So you got to be careful when
you're driving.
You do. Overall, this morning, it seemed like everybody was doing pretty good. Nobody was going anywhere.
LPD reported, I think, 10 overall incidents. I only had a couple through the drive time this morning.
I thought.
So most everyone's done a great job, and they did tonight too. It just that surprise element when that freeze hits and you're not thinking about it, boy, it can get slick in a hurry.
Yeah, it can, and that kind of segues to me thanking my guest today, Jenny Campana. Thank you for being on the show from the Nebraska Department of Transportation. You know, I got a hold of her initially, Chris, to talk about the 2040 plan.
Yeah,
and then ends up, you know, being a 7-hour documentary about the ins and outs of all things Nebraska roads. But hey, you know, it's she's always good about answering anything I throw at her.
Info.
So definitely appreciate her being a part of that. And again, check out that 2040 statewide transportation plan. The virtual open house is available, and they have extended the public comment period. It was supposed to end on Monday, the 18th. But now it has been extended through the 22nd. So, you know, if it's interesting to you, if you drive on the roads in the state, it might have something to do with you at some point or another. So good stuff with her. And then thanks to my first guests on the show, Dr. Roberto Cortinas and the Dominic Cristiano from UNL. Dr. Cortinas, an assistant professor in the Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Science School. And Dominic is a master's student who did his research project on ticks. And as much as I hate them, I think they suck. Ah, no. Sit here and do that all day. And dad ba-dum-boom. Jokes. I know. I need a
little snare drum or something
over there. Yeah. But, you know, that's good information, because we know that spring comes earlier sometimes than it does at other times. And before you know it, those little bloodsuckers are out trying to get their fill, and I don't want them to make me their fill. And so I want to stay far away from them.
Really good information. I liked your reference to TikTok.
Right. That was TikTok, but we are not owned by the Chinese.
No.
So completely.
But also, I appreciate the forward-looking anticipating spring approach to your show today.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Somebody noticed my light at the end of the tunnel.
There you go. Yeah.
That's right. We're looking ahead. Yes. We're looking past today and all the things that are affecting us on this day. But yeah, another piece of good news, Chris. I couldn't believe this when this came down this afternoon. No deaths. No COVID deaths, I should specify, reported in Lincoln, Lancaster County.
Oh, right.
Yeah, how awesome is that?
That's fantastic.
Now, they did have 168 lab-confirmed cases, and we did eclipse 25,000 cases since March 20th of last year. But, you know, there's got to be a good and a bad. And the good news is nobody died from COVID, at least according to the report. So that's good stuff.
It is good.
Deaths remain at 178. Positivity rate is down just a smidge from last week as well. 28.6% is where we finished last week. And as of today, we're at 27.8%.
Nice.
So down a skosh.
That's the direction we want to go.
Skosh is the technical term.
I like that, yes.
For how far we're going to take it. And, of course, you know, local health providers certainly encouraging everyone to get a shot when they are available.
It's
up to you. Make your own decision.
You know,
interesting story today. I saw that I think it was Kellen spoke with the researcher, Kevin Smith, Dr. Smith over at UNL about some mistrust starting to build from the COVID vaccine. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, Chris, and I mean to be perfectly honest, I don't even usually get a flu shot just because I never have. I just don't, you know, but you always hear it. The kids have to have their shots before they go to sixth grade, have to have their shots. So it's not like this is a new concept, but as much as this thing was politicized, you can't blame people for questioning.
I know
the swiftness, the long-term effects.
Yeah,
I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. I'm telling you, if you do what I tell you to do, then you've got bigger fish to fry. You do what you got to do. But I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people are having question marks above their heads right now, and you know. Hey, I hope it's the end-all, be-all, happy time, return to quote-unquote normalcy everybody's looking for, but hey.
Make sure you're paying attention to authority types of information.
Yeah, real people, not just the national media.
And not social media.
There you go. Out, there Chris. You go. See you Monday. Have a great weekend.